This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. Good Monday afternoon to you. I'm John Williams, and let's start with Elise Glink. You know Elise. Mondays joins us as the real estate and financial wellness expert. Her website is thinkglink.com. Hi, Elise. How are you?
Hey, John. Doing just fine, thanks.
Hope you had a good weekend. Did you buy and sell some houses?
Yeah, I did not, actually, but I know a lot of people are. It's kind of crazy out there.
Well, this is maybe the peak real estate season normally, but we sort of, I thought, threw that out during the pandemic in November, December, January were weirdly good months as well, right?
Yeah, this has been an incredible year. In all the years I've covered real estate, it's completely different from any of them. So we are seeing an extremely strong spring, but the problem is a real supply issue. There just simply aren't enough houses for people who want to buy it, which means prices are going up. That makes sellers happy. But on the other hand, for buyers, it's getting really tough to afford things.
Well, there is a zone, like a sweet spot for home prices, too, right? Like, there are pockets where if you're in that spot, it's very good. And if you're in this spot, it's not so good. Am I right about that?
You are. But what's interesting about what's going on in Chicago is neighborhoods that you wouldn't have expected to be having extremely strong price appreciation are. Places like Maywood, which historically hasn't had a lot of price appreciation, is one of the leading price appreciation neighborhoods right now. So it's very good news for some underappreciated neighborhoods.
And that's it. Maybe they were underappreciated to begin with. That is, Maywood is, those aren't expensive homes. They may be nice homes and everybody's happy there. I'm not passing any judgment. I'm just saying the numbers were never there for Maywood, right?
No, in the Southwest, we've always seen sort of slower price appreciation than in most of the suburbs in sort of the North and the Northwest. But it looks like when you look at a map of Chicago, prices are up everywhere. Don't get me wrong, but they're really up.
They're really up, she said. Sounds like she just cut out, but maybe she'll click back in here. Elise Glink is joining us, the real estate and financial wellness expert. I noticed that the median price of an existing home sold in April rose almost 20% year over year, at least at $342,000. That's the median price, right?
Yeah, it is. Can you hear me now?
Yep, and you sound fine. So 341.6 to be exact. So that's year over year, meaning April to April of last. So April of last year, we did not have any confidence yet in the real estate market, maybe.
No, April of last year, we did not. In fact, we didn't have confidence in almost anything other than if we stepped outside, we might all die. That was pretty much the thinking from the beginning of COVID. But as the year moved on, what was interesting was to see how people decided they were getting out of Dodge. And for that, all over the country, that meant if you were in an apartment, they were moving to houses. If you were in a house in the suburbs, you wanted more land. If you were in a suburban piece of land with large real estate, maybe you were moving to 200 acres in some rural neighborhood. Everybody wanted to spread their wings and stay far away from people. And we've seen that continue all the way till today. And so when you look at across the country, the areas of the country that are really lighting up, it's sort of small to mid-size, more rural areas of the country, towns that were always maybe vacation home destinations, but for many people have now become primary destinations.
Are new home costs still inflated because of the supplies shortage?
Oh, yeah. The lumber prices are out of control. We're seeing the average cost of a home, a brand new home, go up by $36,000, $37,000. That's a very significant cost increase. We're not seeing that. It's difficult, as it turns out, John. It's difficult to be able to set up a whole mill, right? You can't just sort of throw one up over the weekend and find, you know, qualified people to run it. And so the people who own mills are pretty much running flat out, but there's no plans to bring new mills online.
Elise Glink on the Wintrust Business Lunch is talking to us a little bit about the real estate scene. She usually does on Mondays. Talk a little bit about rents versus home ownership. What's going on there?
Yeah, it's interesting, John. So for a long time, with interest rates at rock bottom lows, and we're back down there, by the way, we're just a hair over all-time record lows for mortgages right now. So if you haven't refinanced, you might want to do that. But that made it cheaper to buy for a long time than rent. But now from LendingTree, there's a new story today, a new study that they're publishing, that renting is now cheaper than owning in all 50 states. And that's because what we talked about a moment ago, the price of homes is really dramatically rising.
I would have guessed, though, that renting would always be cheaper. I'm a little surprised to hear that in evidently many areas, renting was more expensive.
Well, it's interesting. You can always find a cheaper place to rent, right? But if you're looking, you're trying to do an apples to oranges comparison here, but you're trying to do it as close as you can. So what they do is they go out and they take a look at the cost differential of renting the same size home that you would buy. So it's got all the same amenities. Mm-hmm. It's in the same neighborhood. You know, what that costs versus what it would cost to actually own it with today's price and mortgage and the taxes and all of that. And so in some neighborhoods, you know, it's a small difference, right? Right now they're saying the average difference is about $606. But in other neighborhoods, like in Chicago, the median monthly gross rent was $1,122. The median monthly housing costs with a mortgage, $1,888. And so the difference between renting and owning in Chicago is over $760 a month.
I think everybody's eyes just went up into their head and they're going, okay, where am I on that continuum? If you're a renter, are you above or below $1,122? That's the median. Is many on either side of that for the gross monthly rent and the homeownership cost? I presume this is the mortgage, but not the PMI or all of those other.
No, I think it's considered the mortgage interest and taxes, right? Yeah. Because that's really the total cost of ownership. Yeah. It probably doesn't include things like painting your bedroom blue, however.
$1,888. Yeah, so where are you on that line? By the way, what is the status of forbearance these days?
Right. So what's interesting is new numbers from the Mortgage Bankers Association show that the share of loans in forbearance is now down to 4.22%. That's less than 2 million people. But at the height of the pandemic last year, as many as 13% of all people with a mortgage were actually in forbearance. And that's a really big number. That was about 7 million at the top. And the people who are mostly in it now are people with the lowest credit scores and, you know, the people who are most fragile financially. And so we're seeing that everybody who's kind of was in the middle to upper income who needed sort of temporary help, they've all been taken care of and they're now out of forbearance. And it's everybody else who's left who's really still on that struggling part.
Where's the Mason-Dixon line on that one? What was the number?
In terms of credit
forbearance
scores
and credit scores.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's around 620, 630. So if you have a credit score of less than 620, about 30% of all mortgage borrowers participated in forbearance. And that's really the group, the sort of under 630 that's still in trouble today.
The Dow and the markets are still kind of in record territories, aren't they?
Yeah, this is we had a little blip with Bitcoin last week. And, you know, when everybody says they're going to be investing in Doge, you want to really run for the hills, my personal opinion. But, yeah, markets look very strong today. We've got the Dow up about 200 points right now. NASDAQ is up 1.5%, almost 200 points. And it's just interesting to watch how these things are really, there's so much energy behind reopening. I think the fact that COVID, we've got seven states where over 70% of people are fully vaccinated now. It's really starting to make a difference. I know that I got invited to my first post-COVID party coming up next weekend. And
wow.
Everybody said they were vaccinated, and I'm excited to go and see everybody.
Indoors with people in a living room having drinks and sandwiches, that sort of thing?
I think if it rains, yes, but the goal is to be outside with drinks, barbecue, and more drinks.
Yeah. And will you be comfortable in that setting?
I think if knowing that everybody is vaccinated, then yes, I will. And it's not a very large group. So let me be clear. We're not doing 50 people. I think there's probably about 10 to 12. Mm-hmm. So outside at a big table. Yeah, I think I feel okay about that.
Notice what you did is what we all do now. When you say you're going to a party, they say, but it's just 12 people. We'll be outside and everybody's been vaccinated. You have to, we are all in a sort of mental place where we have to justify interacting with other human beings, for crying out loud.
I've forgotten how to have small talk, John. I have to go practice. I mean, I talk to you every week, but,
no,
you know.
I think you'll be fine. I think you're the sort of person at a party people come up to and they go, all right, Elise, so we painted the rooms blue. What do you think we can get? What's the market like in our neighborhood? You know, you're not just a realtor. You're not a realtor. But I can just imagine people picking your brain for analysis about the market.
Yeah, it's a little bit like being a real estate doctor, right? You know, can you tell me what I could do to this house so that it will be worth $50,000 more?
Yeah.
And, you know, I stroke my imaginary beard and I try to come up with something smart.
Let me ask you this, though. You kind of look down your nose a little bit there. Dogecoin, you don't like cryptocurrencies overall or that one particularly?
I do like it. I'm a little bit worried about how so many people seem to be so aware of cryptocurrencies and are, you know, are looking to plow money in. And I worry a little bit that we don't really fully understand how this is going to all play out. So there's a number of sort of financial columnists and economists who talk about how, you know, the things that really do well are the fintechs that solve problems. And the only problem that many economists see that cryptocurrencies are solving right now is for drug dealers, bad actors, you know, black market dealings, where you really don't want stuff that's traceable. And that's really the benefit of cryptocurrency, right? You can store cash away. Nobody knows where it is, and only you can access it and, you know, don't lose your key number. But that doesn't really solve problems for the larger world and the larger economy. And I worry when so many people are plowing money into something that's highest and best use seems to be helping criminals. But we'll see where it all shakes out. Like, I think we're very early days right now.
I suspect you're right about that. You obviously know more about this than I do, or your opinions are more informed, but it would seem to me like we're in its infancy, and it does seem to be getting legitimized more and more every single day, right? Businesses that are traditional businesses, we understand, are accepting Bitcoin. Although, look what's happened to its value, right? I mean, 30,000 on Wednesday? Wow.
Yeah, so they're accepting it and then they're not accepting it. So what was it that made Elon Musk do a complete turnaround after saying, yes, I'm going to accept it and I'm putting $1.5 billion into cryptocurrency, and the next, you know, 3 days later, suddenly, you know, we're not going to do that. And you just have to feel like it was some government somewhere that just went, yeah, I don't think so.
But this is a more mental bet than an actual one. I've never bought a currency in my life anyway, but I would say Dogecoin is not that expensive and it's in its infancy. And if it's down, if cryptocurrencies are down right now, maybe this is the time to get in. Be a contrarian, Elise.
Yeah, I'm absolutely all for being a contrarian, but I think there are smarter ways than doing it, than putting it all on, you know, this to me feels like horse racing, right? I'm going to go with Dogecoin for 20, John. I'd rather see, I think that there are different exchange-traded funds that are starting up that are with the major investment houses. You can get a taste of cryptocurrency there if you want it, and you're really investing across the line. There are some other different platforms that are going public where you're really investing in the platform itself. They make money on every trade. They're trading 30 or 40 different kinds of Bitcoin. Feels to me like that might be an interesting bet. Of course, you have to make sure the people running it are not actually under investigation by major federal governments around the world, and many of them are.
Hold on, I'm writing that down. Make sure they're not being investigated.
Right. No indictments, and that would be a good plus. So there are ways to spread that bet around.
Elise Glink is the financial and real estate expert. Visit thinkglink.com. Thanks, Elise.
You're welcome, John.
Next Monday, we'll check in with her again. John Williams here, and Catherine Davis here, too. Hi, Catherine. Welcome back.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing real well. I hope you had a good weekend, huh?
And finally.
Yeah, no kidding. Let's talk. There's a couple of things that I want to get to that you all have been covering. One of them has to do with Zoom meetings. But before we get to that, let's talk about this Silicon Valley law firm that is coming to Chicago. What's that all about, and what does that mean?
Yeah, so the firm is called Cooley. It's based out in San Francisco, founded in 1920, so been around for about 100 years or so. But they are bringing a new office to Chicago. You know, this is a law firm that specializes in serving startups and high-growth companies. So, you know, they're helping startups get venture capital financing and figure out their exit strategy, whether that means being acquired by another company or going public. And them coming to Chicago is really sort of a reflection of the startup activity happening in Chicago right now. You know, they're like, we need an office so we can be close to all these companies that are raising record amounts of capital and seeing a lot of success, not just here in Chicago, but sort of on that national stage as well. So I believe the firm has already opened the office here, and they were recruiting from some high-profile law firms in the area. So I think they have about 10, 15 lawyers and plan to hire more in the future.
You can always say, oh, we're on the cutting edge of the technology scene, but that's what boosters tend to say. I think if somebody else says, no, we're going to put our money where your mouth is, we're going to move an office there, we're going to invest in capital there, we're going to hire people there, and it's a private firm doing that, that's a little validation, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And for a firm of this, you know, caliber to be coming here, you know, it's my understanding that Cooley is like the Silicon Valley startup law firm. You know, they have more than 6,000 startup and corporate clients, including 35% of the country's unicorn companies. Don't know if you're familiar with that term, John, but it's a term describing startups worth $1 billion or more. So these are, you know, the cameos of the startup scene, essentially.
Yeah. I just saw something about Cameo the other day, and they continue to prosper, don't they? They, you know, that was such a novelty. I thought, oh, I don't know how long this will go or how well this will go. Somebody stopped me in the hall late last week and said, hey, check this out. I got a Cameo gift for a friend. And then they showed me the video. And I think their plan is now to actually have live interactive Cameo calls with people. So you don't just get a video they've recorded, but they actually zoom in on your meeting or birthday party. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, they continue to expand. And I think even now, you know, they're also doing some stuff in the B2B space, you know, working with other companies as opposed to just those consumers.
Speaking of Zoom meetings, so what's this story that Jim Dahlke wrote? Spot raises $5 million from Kleiner Perkins to put an end to Zoom meetings. End of Zoom meetings. What are you guys writing about here?
Yeah, so Spot is a new startup in Chicago from serial entrepreneur Greg Kaplan. He had a travel startup before the pandemic. And Spot essentially, you know, wants to help you disconnect from the Zoom meeting. So, you know, they have their app syncs with your email. You can send calendar invites to, you know, the people you're having this conference call with. And then essentially it sets up like a pretty normal phone call for you. You can, you know, the idea is you can put your phone in your pocket, you can go on a walking meeting or, you know, do a chore or whatever else you want to do. But the idea is to get you away from the average video call and having to stare at your computer for, you know, potentially hours a day.
Is this a video call, though, or, you know, like you're looking at your phone, or it's just an audio conference call?
It's strictly an audio conference call. You know, one of the features that they've added to sort of make this, you know, more valuable than just the average conference call is that the software has technology that can transcribe portions of the call, sort of allows you to take notes in a certain way. And then after the call, you can send those notes to the people that were on the call with you.
I wonder why that didn't exist. Maybe it's a software build that's more arduous than I would imagine. That sounds like a good idea, because otherwise it's just a conference call. I could do that on my phone right now. I don't know if there's a limit, but plenty of us have put two or three people on a conference call on our phones already, right?
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. But, you know, investors see promise in this. You know, we wrote about them last week because they raised $5 million. And that was actually on the heels of about $2 million in March. So $7 million going into, you know, this conference call app that wants to transcribe the conversation for you.
One more then. Let's just talk about Lanza Tech. This is another one you wrote about. What's this story?
Yeah, so LanzaTech is a really cool company. They're technically based in Skokie, but, you know, we consider that Chicagoland. And they're working in the clean tech and climate change fighting technology space. So, you know, they have developed a method to create renewable forms of fuel by fermenting bacteria and converting them into useful gases like ethanol. And this can be used to create plastic materials as well as renewable fuel for airplanes. And we wrote about them last week because they received some more grant funding from the Department of Energy. So they'll be using this funding to help sort of expand what they can make with their technology. So I believe they're going into like perfumes. You can make renewable perfumes and other packaging products as well.
That's good to hear. Catherine Davis. Thanks for joining us, Catherine. Catherine is one of the associate editors at Chicago Inno. She is the associate. Are there a bunch of you or just you, Catherine, being the associate editor over at Chicago Inno?
So I am the only associate editor at Chicago Inno, but our parent publication, Chicago Business Journal, also has some associate editors. So
got that clear. Nice to talk to you, Catherine. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, John.
We continue on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. United Airlines will give its loyalty program members a shot at winning free flights for a year of travel if they get vaccinated. The new sweepstakes is called Your Shot to Fly, and it's meant to support the Biden administration's efforts to get more people vaccinated against coronavirus. Any new or existing Mileage Plus member who uploads their vaccination records to the airline's mobile app or website between now and June 22nd can be entered to win a round-trip flight for two in any class of service to anywhere in the world United flies. United will give away 30 pairs of tickets through the month of June. On July 1st, United will announce five randomly selected members for the grand prize of travel for a year for themselves and a companion. Chicago-based CNA Financial reportedly paid $40 million in ransom after a March cyber attack. Cranes reports the company paid the hackers about 2 weeks after a trove of company data was stolen. The hack locked CNA out of its network. According to Palo Alto Networks, the average ransom payment in 2020 was about $312,000. The $40 million CNA ransom is bigger than any previously disclosed payment. CNA had previously said it did not believe the systems of record, claim systems, or underwriting systems where the majority of policyholder data is stored were impacted. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business food now. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, before I get to that, how did Grace Kintzler get the boot last night? She swung for the fences with that Whitney Houston song.
Yep.
And I thought, connected.
I think the danger is when you try and cover a famous song by a famous singer, you'll pale in comparison. I don't think she did.
Okay.
I thought she, of the three, I had her two or one myself, but I'm not king yet, Steve.
Okay. Yeah. There's a lot of excitement about cicadas, John. Lots of coverage and lots
of segue.
Yeah, they're going to be singing soon. Lots of coverage and in the national and local media, too, and a lot of misinformation. Turns out, according to our expert, it may not be all that bad, all that noisy.
Actually, we're not going to really have many cicadas in this part of the country.
That's our gardening guru, Jim Fazell.
That doesn't mean that we won't have cicadas, because the dog day cicada is going to occur every year.
So he says we'll get some, just not the huge amounts that areas to the east are going to get this year.
This big outbreak this year happens to be the 17-year cicada for the Great Eastern Brood, the Marlette 10 brood. Now, this occurs from Indiana to the East Coast, not generally in Illinois. Oh, possibly there could be some spillover into some of the southeast counties like probably Iroquois or Vermilion, maybe Edgar and Clark counties.
He says our turn for the big invasion will happen in 4 years when two different broods of cicadas descend upon Chicago at the same time.
We're going to have a combined emergence of the 17-year cicada, the Marlette 13 brood, and we're going to have the Great Southern brood, which is a 13-year brood, both of these life cycles overlapping. So we're going to have a lot of fun in 4 years.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fazell. Weather is again going to be a driver at the Chicago Board of Trade this week. And how about this for a non-committal forecast? The National Weather Service summer forecast for the Central Corn Belt, that includes Illinois, contains equal chances for above normal and below normal temperatures and precipitation for June through August. Well, okay. The Northwest Corn Belt and Northern Plains is where the trouble is. Soil moisture is short and drought is expected to persist. And a survey a few days ago of Kansas wheat fields showed a bumper crop may be coming, and that has wheat futures down right now about 9 cents. Corn is off 2.5, and soybeans are down about 7 cents. At the Merck, hogs are down 1.1%, and cattle are also trading lower today. Today is National Escargot Day. As president of the French club for 2 years in high school, I have to think that John is a fan.
Of escargot?
Uh-huh.
No, no.
Okay. You know, snails, it's an acquired taste, isn't it? I found that with enough garlic and butter and courage enhancer, they aren't all that bad. I suppose the same could be said of eating cicadas, but I'm not planning on finding that out. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Here's Amy Guth. We talked about this a little while ago, but briefly, the Pope's getting a new car, right, Amy?
Yeah, that's exactly right. He is the Pope Mobile is going to be environmentally friendly. And that is from a company that's from Fisker. And the head of Fisker said that he was really inspired by the Pope's commitment to the environment and the impact of climate change. And he wanted to do this and think ahead of future generations. So this is going to be based on the Fisker Ocean SUV. They're putting that into production in 2022. But then they're making this modified one for the Pope. It's going to be available in the fourth quarter of next year is when they're planning on delivering that to him. So Toyota made a customized version of its Mirai fuel cell vehicle for the Pope a while back, I think about a year or so ago, but it hasn't really been in use because it takes a very particular type of fuel that is hard to get. So given the Pope's heavy travel schedule, you know, he's out and about seeing the people, they haven't used the Toyota that much. But this one is going to be zero emissions. And there's a picture of it. NBC's got a picture of it. Fisker released this photo and NBC's running it. And it looks a little bit reminds me of the Fiat that, you know, that he has now, but it's a little bit longer body. And of course there's like the glass piece on the top where you can see him wave and all that, but we can look for a zero emission Pope Mobile starting next year.
Zero emissions notwithstanding, I think there would be a market for it. I think there's enough hams, clowns, and celebrities in the world that would like to have their own Pope Mobile, just drive down, wave to the neighbors. They go, hey, there's Mr. Johnson. Hey, Mr. Johnson. You know, there's Grandma. Hi, Grandma. It could be the Granny Mobile, whatever, you know.
But, right, with the little pop-up thing on the top. I'm sure a lot of people would want to take that. Yeah.
My dad would love that. Talk to me a little bit about, where was the story? Hold on a second. I want to make sure that I get to this before our time with you expires, and I think I just buried it. Well, talk to me about The Late Show with Stephen Colbert and how he's going to perform in front of an audience.
Yeah, that's right. So he has announced that the Ed Sullivan Theater has been just absolutely closed down and quiet since March of 2020, and he's bringing people back. He's going to have a full audience on June 14th. That's his plan. And he released a really lovely statement. He said, over the last 437 days, my staff and crew and family have amazed me with their professionalism and creativity as we made shows for an audience we couldn't see or hear. So he's going to welcome back audiences. I'm sure that's going to be, a lot of people want to go see him do that. But I think that kind of goes to this bigger kind of piece. We've seen some movies starting to make some pretty big box office moves internationally. Fast and Furious right now is the leader. It doesn't come to the U.S. until June 25th, but it's doing very well internationally. And I think there's this big question of, okay, if you open up audiences, are people going to pack in to see Colbert? Are people going to pack in to see movies? And I think that remains to be seen in the next month.
That number for the opening weekend internationally of Fast and Furious, $164 million, that sounds very big to me. If you want to be encouraged about people coming back to movies, that's a good number, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I mean, that's definitely the winner right now. It's going really well. Of that number you just said, $162.4 million, $135.6 million of that is from China, and that is the biggest movie market in the world. So at very least, we know Chinese audiences and Chinese moviegoers are willing to get back into theaters. So we'll see how that translates to U.S. audiences. Like I said, June 25th is when Fast and Furious is coming here. So we'll see what that looks like. We've had a few releases that have, kind of quietly gone, and we're still kind of struggling with, or not struggling, but still kind of trying to navigate What does that look like now that we have seen what it looks like to release a film directly to streaming? We saw, you know, Disney made a big move with Mulan and put that straight to Disney Plus. So I think it'll be really interesting to watch the entertainment industry for the months ahead. But even I think more broadly to see how consumer behavior may have changed through this last year.
Virgin Galactic stock jumped. Why? What's going on with them that's so positive?
Yeah. This is so interesting to me. I'm both fascinated by this and terrified of it at the same time. And that is, so Virgin Galactic did a successful spaceflight test over the weekend. They have to do four, and the FAA is going to review the flight data after them. So this is the first of the four. The fourth one is going to carry Sir Richard Branson in it. So after the four is when, if the FAA says all this flight data is good, that's when they will begin to carry some passengers. That's when they will start to move forward with commercialized space travel, which is, even though it's something that's, you know, we've been talking about for the last several years, the fact that it's kind of upon us now still seems so, you know, so far off and very Jetson-like to me. But here we are nonetheless. And I mean, I think a lot of eyes will be on this fourth flight. It's carrying four passengers, including, you know, Richard Branson. So we'll see how that goes.
Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Follow that for us, Amy. We'll visit again.
I will. Thanks so much.